Companies are pouring money into AI, but they're not building the skills to use it effectively. That's an upskilling problem and an investment mismatch, and it's exactly what Pluralsight AI Academy fixes. This hands-on learning program lets your teams develop AI skills that stick, the kind they'll need when it matters. The result is faster adoption and more value from every AI investment. Major brands around the world trust Pluralsight. See why it's the right fit for you too at pluralsight.com/AI Academy.
Coming up on AI Having a Clue. Anyway.
Oh God, I'm violently agreeing with George Butler.
He done it! Come on!
Are AI doctors putting the public's health at risk? Coca-Cola mixed with an onion can be a pain relief treatment.
Can artificial intelligence be a cure for loneliness? The AI kill switch. I love the sound of this. Tell us more.
And a brand new font that AI can't read.
Is this super, super dangerous, or is this... Hello, and welcome to AI Having a Clue, brought to you with KPMG. It's the podcast where we unpack the wild world of AI, and I am average human, George Butler. I don't understand a lot of this AI jargon.
And me, James Chandler, artificial intelligence's apex predator.
And the man responsible for most of this jargon. Welcome. Lots happening today in the world of AI. We've got tons of news to dive into, a listener question for James to respond to, and a big thing to find out about. Until then, James, a couple of questions for you. Firstly, I have to say, obviously there's lots of different smart speakers out there, but ever since my Amazon Echo was given the upgrade, the new version, the sort of up-to-date AI tech, it's been absolutely fantastic. I've been really, really enjoying it. What about you? Have you been enjoying yours?
More of a sort of glasses man than the ears. Eyes rather than ears.
But you've been upgraded now, right? Because surely Mr. Tech James Chandler has been upgraded to the latest edition of Alexa.
You know what? I think he's wasted on me because I just wouldn't use it. As I say, I'm sort of more into the glasses.
But you've got an Echo. You do have an Echo, don't you?
Probably might be something in the... garage.
You've got one. I've seen it. It's in your kitchen.
But you know me. I'm all about the pockets. The pockets and the pendants and the glasses.
You've still not been upgraded, have you? You've still not been upgraded.
Doesn't matter though, does it? In a way.
Oh, it kills you, doesn't it? Joking aside, why do you think it's happened? Why do you think that I'm on the upgraded version and have been for several months?
Maybe they're trying to make it easier to use for, you know, people who are technophobic. I don't know.
You were about to say for thick people. Wow.
You enjoy it. It sounds like you're having a great time with it. And if it helps you be more AI cognizant, then fantastic, I say. Well done.
You mentioned your pocket. I feel like we just talk about it every week now because I'm still mystified by the fact that you are recording people 24/7 with your little new device.
It's not 24/7. This is one of the biggest, I think this is one of the biggest things to get over. It's that it's still intentional. I've still got to sort of press the button to do it. But in terms of, for people that are not good at remembering things like me, it's been a godsend. The summaries are really, really good. And I'm not using it for everything, but just things where I need to remember that I would ordinarily forget. Fantastic. Can't recommend it enough.
Any other little AI rambles or rants that you'd like to have?
I haven't. I mean, the news is pretty wild this week. We sort of go through peaks and troughs with it where, you know, there's sort of one or two things. We're going to talk about it later on, but the Elon interview with The Economist.
Oh, my word.
He really is box office in a sort of an odd way, but you hang off his every word. What on earth is he going to say next? It's phenomenal.
You can see why him and Trump were good pals briefly, and also how they fell out, because they have that similar thing about them where you're kind of horrified at what they're going to say, but as you say, you just can't not watch. We'll get into the Elon interview later, but I really do think the Economist did a great job, and their editor-in-chief, Zanny.
Oh, she really did. Yeah.
I've seen lots of stuff. I mean, the questioning around his views on the UK were just fantastic, where she goes, well, I live here. Let me tell you, when was the last time you were here? It was years ago, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, you're spreading misinformation on this. So I thought that was absolutely brilliant. But look, we're going to get into that in a little bit, but we should probably start with what's most definitely been the biggest news story from the past week, and that is one you may have seen already, that OpenAI were testing a new model and it escaped the test ground and ending up hacking something. Tell us more about this crazy story and the aftermath that has come over the last week.
Yeah, it was a highly sophisticated AI-powered cyber attacker that for a moment no one knew who it was or what it was. People were saying, is it another nation state? Could it be advanced cybercrime? So basically, an AI agent went and hacked Hugging Face. Now, Hugging Face is a bit like the App Store, but for AI models. So you don't download apps. Developers can go in there and they can download basically AI brains that they can then build into their own products. A really, really useful toolkit for developers. Hugging Face found that they had been hacked. They said that whoever had done it was highly sophisticated. They talked about 17,000 actions in under 48 hours, which by any stretch, whether you know anything about this world or not, seems like a hell of a lot. And they said it was far faster than what a human could have done. So realistically, they knew that it would have been AI. OpenAI then came out after everyone had speculated who it could have been, and they revealed that they were the culprit. And it was actually two advanced versions of ChatGPT that were being tested for their cybersecurity capabilities. One of them had got out of this secure testing area that they'd set up for it, got internet access, and gone in and attacked Hugging Face. So, effectively, in the sort of the real world, it would be like a sort of a lab test that someone was doing on someone, and that person or thing managed to break out of the lab and then went and did some awful things elsewhere. This has clearly raised a lot of eyebrows, not just in the tech community, but I think in sort of consumer consciousness as well. I've seen this covered everywhere from the BBC and CNN, places like the news agents. They've all been talking about this.
But James, this is not the first time there's been a story like this. Go back a couple of weeks and there was the whole Anthropic thing with their big new technology, which escaped and it was so dangerous that they had to tell the world about it. The cynical part of me is going, is this for real? Is this super, super dangerous? Or is this just OpenAI wanting to be written about, talked about as developing the latest and best AI technology? Because it does seem like a bit of a pattern here that these big tech firms are having these huge issues and leaks. And I mean, if it is the truth, it's worrying. Well, is there a chance that it could be a little bit fabricated?
Well, I think maybe you're right to raise or arch an eyebrow in this case. Look, people are falling down in one of two sides. One is that, look, this shows some really serious weaknesses in how you actually contain AI and how do you actually test in a safe way. If these models are just getting so advanced they can just break out of the testing capability and go and do what they want, that's very, very problematic. The other side, as you've neatly articulated, is this just an advert for how powerful OpenAI's capabilities are? A big, big flex from them, which is basically saying, look how powerful our system has become. I don't know. It's sort of hard to believe that they would go so far to fabricate this.
I mean, look, the thing is if this is genuinely something that is happening, and it's happened to Anthropic, it's now happened to OpenAI, it's probably happening to other tech firms, if this is a thing, this is so concerning, because why don't we just stop here? Why don't we just leave AI where it is? Why don't we stop pushing things and developing it further and further? Why do we want to be creating this thing that, like, can't be controlled? It's like nuts. It's like developing some sort of Frankenstein monster, making it more powerful and more powerful, and then it turns out it can destroy everything. It's like, well, why did we build it in the first place?
There is always some bias with these things, and this isn't, you know, if it's happened, it's not to defend it. You know, Tesla suffers from the same. Like, the amount of journeys of the self-driving bit of Tesla that it can do, you know, hundreds and thousands of journeys. The minute it has that one crash, it gets an undue amount of attention and it makes all of the headlines. And the same could be true here. There could be hundreds of thousands and millions of tests that are happening where the AI remains safely in the and contained in the environment they set it up in. The one time that it can escape is, of course, the time that everyone is going to talk about and it's going to kind of get the headlines.
But there's a difference between experimenting on new technology, on a new type of car or whatever it might be, and creating like an apparent monster that has a mind of its own and can hack into things and do dangerous stuff when it's not been asked to.
Well, look, the other side of the coin is, you know, it was a testing environment and it's managed to break out. OpenAI will, of course, know how to make sure that it can't break out again. So you could argue that it's better that it happens now in a test environment rather than, you know, something gets sort of pushed live and it could hack into financial systems or infrastructure in a city or something like that. So now that's happened, you can kind of patch the fault, as it were, to make sure that it doesn't happen again. It sounds like I'm being a cheerleader for OpenAI. I'm really not, but it's, you know, I just wonder whether it's getting undue attention because of who they are and the valuation and all these other things. If it's not, and it is a bit of an advert for how powerful they are, my God, have they got some coverage for this.
It's the sort of story that a year or two ago I would have been so horrified by. I would have felt physically sick about the idea that this could happen. I think now I'm probably not the only person that feels quite numb to all of this. It's like,
He's been numbed by AI, my God.
Of course there's an AI that can crack its way through a test scenario and hack something. Yeah, of course it can. Yeah. There is that cynicism in me that thinks actually Anthropic, OpenAI, they're both looking to raise a whole load of money with their new IPOs. They both want to be talked about and seen as leading tech businesses, creating the most brilliant and best new AI products in them. Yeah, there's a slight question mark
there.
I tell you what, interestingly, off the back of this, US lawmakers have introduced an idea that they want to bring in called the AI kill switch. I love the sound of this. Tell us more.
Just imagining this sort of cartoon-like big lever that you can sort of just pull down and kill all AI.
Bring.
Yeah, you could.
It's next to Donald Trump's Diet Coke button in the Oval Office.
It's a proposal that is going to give the US government emergency powers over dangerous AI systems. So something like this could happen, and you're right, someone could just kind of pull the lever down. I'm not quite sure how it would work in practice. The bill that's being talked about would require AI companies to maintain the ability to slow down, suspend, or completely shut down advanced AI systems. The Department of Homeland Security basically then gain authority over that AI system, and they can switch it off if they think it's going to pose any kind of problem or any issue to public safety. This is an interesting one, only because...
I love it. I love this idea. It's great. And why would we not want this?
I've never seen him so animated. Look, it was only weeks ago that Trump was floating the idea that perhaps, you know, there should be a bit more accountability. And he got completely shut down by all of the tech bros and saying, don't you dare come anywhere near us with what smells like regulation. I mean, this is totally like not even regulation. It's like if you do something we deem as bad, we're going to shut you down.
But yes, and that's how things should be. If you create a product that is in any other sector, if you created a product, let's take the food sector. If you created a product that was a new thing and all of a sudden there's a huge risk to public safety, you're not going to be allowed to still sell it. So of course we should have the ability to kill this technology if it starts to become dangerous. And that's not trying to stifle progression or stop innovation or development. Crack on with that. But if you reach a stage where you create something that is harmful, we need to have something that can stop that from existing. And this is an absolute no-brainer in my view, and I can't understand how you could argue against it.
Well, I think there are many things all over the world that could be harmful, but we don't necessarily give the government control or a big red button on when they turn it or turn it off. Imagine
now, James, name me one thing that could lead to the destruction of human beings if it got out of hand that we can't get rid of in an instant.
Well, imagine there was a water company, and the water company were funneling lots of sewage and naughty stuff into rivers, which was sort of then going into our food system, whatever. At the moment, we rely on those companies to not do that. And if they do it, we give them fines or, you know, people can face imprisonment. But what the government doesn't have is a button that can shut off the pipe that goes into the river, which delivers the sewage, because that's kind of not the world that we live in.
Okay, what would happen if that water feed was spiked with a deadly toxin from a country that didn't quite like us, which could potentially kill people if consumed? Do you think we'd still be drinking that water?
Welcome to our episode of 24. This is fantastic, Mr. Jack Bauer. I think the intention behind it is a good one. I think it could be unintended consequences. I mean, who in the US government is going to decide when it's sort of gone too far, and who's going to press the button? Is that going to be the president? Is it going to be the chief of war? You know, what Pete Hegseth? I mean, who's going to sort of do that? Because that's going to be some judgment call.
If you have guidelines and rules, mm-hmm. if something is triggered, then there is the ability to turn it off. Then there's a clear guidance in terms of if this thing happens, if an AI can end up hacking into something, or if it poses as a threat in certain ways, then there is the option to turn it off. I don't really see how any of these big tech companies could argue against it. Clearly they will. There was a story just the other day about how there's been record spending in Washington from these big AI firms on lobbying. Record amounts being spent so that they can get their own way in government. It seems at the moment that money is a pretty good investment because they're not being stopped. They have complete free will. But I think this is the other issue. They're becoming so powerful and they have so much agency that they can do what they want. There are no consequences, and ultimately there's nothing to stop them at the moment. And I think you need things like this to check them just a little bit and to make sure that the first priority is the safety of people. So yeah, I'm very pro this idea.
I don't disagree with that, but I would suggest that perhaps we've got to a place where we feel like we need an AI kill switch, which is a consequence of a very light / zero regulation and trying to keep some of these companies in check that we've seen over the past few years from the US government. I think some gentle regulation, guidance around what you can and can't do might prevent us getting to a place where we need a kill switch. But up until now, that doesn't seem to have been very high on the agenda. But there we go.
Right. Well, one of the reasons that this industry hasn't been regulated and is being left to do what they want is that it is arguably single-handedly pumping up the American economy. I read something I can't remember the source on this. So I will need to come back to you on that. I read something about the stock exchange in New York. And if you took out any company involving AI, there's been no growth. And you obviously, in fact, I think there was a decline and you put them in there. Clearly, there's been huge growth over the last few years. So I think that is one of the reasons that these companies are being allowed to do what they're doing, because it's apparently boosting the economy, even though there was a real question around the actual economic good that this kind of AI arms race is doing. So on that note, a very quick, show me the money eye.
Show me the money eye.
Update. Love that one. That's good. It's good. It's good.
Show me the money eye.
Very quickly on this, we're talking a lot about the IPOs, the big IPOs that have been speculated. And we've talked over the last few months about this kind of potential AI bubble that's happening. Some seem to think it's nonsense. Some people think it's a real threat. So Alphabet, who obviously own Google, and Tesla have both suffered very sharp share price falls. That's a tongue twister. after revealing just how much money they're pouring into AI.
Google now expects to spend up to, just north of $200 billion this year. All of that going on things like AI infrastructure, things like servers, data centers. And Tesla also reported negative free cash flow. Theirs around $1.1 billion, and they expect to spend around $25 billion on those kind of infrastructure things as well. And look, the question that investors are asking, quite rightly, is how sustainable is this? How can you continue to spend at this rate before we start seeing money come back or sort of meaningful returns on our investment? Google have come out clearly and said that, look, there is huge demand for AI. That's why we've got to build these things, got to build the infrastructure. We've got to put cost into this thing, but we still think that it's going to be enormous in terms of the payback. But it does sort of beg this question, with so much of AI that's kind of interlinked and investments in different places that all kind of lead back to the same place. Are we going to see this bubble burst at some point? And we keep coming back to this question.
I mean, more and more is being pumped in. The returns aren't yet there. We've talked about that at length, especially with Jack Benjamin, our friend from the Media Leader. And, you know, there is yet another story this week about $250 $1 billion being invested. This one is all to do with, I've got to say it, James. Sorry, NVIDIA. NVIDIA time. It's what happens when you say the word. So NVIDIA are helping to underwrite OpenAI with this $250 billion. What's going on here? Because again, it seems like yet more money, huge, vast amounts of money, I should add, are being pumped into the ever-growing arms race.
Yeah, and we should say reportedly they are in discussions to provide $250 billion worth of financing guarantee to help OpenAI with their data center expansion plans. We know, we keep coming back to it again and again, you need data centers in order to process all of these prompts and all of this agent work that's happening. So the arms race is really in how quickly can you get these things.
Why would they be giving this money to OpenAI?
Well, there could be some sort of grace in favor type thing that OpenAI only commit to using NVIDIA chips, perhaps, you know, particularly when we're seeing China starting to develop their own chips for a lot cheaper. There will be others as well who are creating chips, not as big as NVIDIA. They're the market leader here, but they will still want to shore up what is arguably going to be one of the biggest companies in the world when it floats. And there is already a very deep relationship here, and what you can see is that is just deepening it even more. So, you know, there is no doubt NVIDIA will get something from this. And there's no doubt a big win for OpenAI because they can continue to scale around the data centers as they plan. The sort of the problem is that it's all quite interwoven. Like, you only need one of these dominoes to fall and it suddenly becomes very, very problematic. Imagine a world, seems fairly hard to imagine, that, NVIDIA was no more tomorrow. That could have a massive impact on, you know, maybe a dozen companies in AI that have relied on NVIDIA for financing.
I suppose, James, one of the reasons why NVIDIA has seen this huge growth in their value is they must be one of the only companies in this sector that, whilst they're investing a lot, they're actually taking a lot of money in. Clearly, OpenAI is quite the opposite to that. So it's very interesting. Very interesting.
And look, there's one thing to say about investors as well. Like, it's not about how much that company, if it was to float tomorrow, would make you. They really are looking at, yes, the present value of the company, but they're really looking in the future. Like, how much money is this company going to make in the future? And there's always two questions that they're asking. One is exactly that. How much return am I going to get on this? How much money is it going to make me? The second, which is why this story is really interesting, is how confident am I that the company will make that money? What could get in the way of it doing? Is the bubble going to burst? Are they spending far too much and coming into all this sort of negative free cash flow? So that's the sort of the interesting thing at the moment. And that's, I think, why investors start to get quite nervous around Alphabet, around Tesla, around, you know, this deal with NVIDIA and OpenAI.
We would jump now from OpenAI to a man who knows that business very well. We are, of course, talking about Elon Musk, sadly.
He probably needs his own jingle, actually.
He definitely doesn't. There's enough rubbish that comes out of his mouth. There's this very viral interview that has happened with The Economist. Their editor-in-chief, Zanny Minton-Beddoes, had this quite extraordinary chat with him about a lot of topics. We won't get into all of it because a lot of it isn't relevant and it's just Musk talking rubbish about the UK and other things he doesn't know very much about. So let's look at the AI chat here. He made some, frankly, quite ridiculous claims. Should we start with the money one?
Yeah, he said he was sort of pushed on. He was sort of saying money would largely become irrelevant. He said money won't matter in 2036, to which sort of Zanny, who was brilliant, by the way, just sort of goes back at him and skewers him and said, I think your investors are going to be so a bit concerned if you think money's not going to exist. And he sort of goes on this very lofty point around, you know, if you've got everything you want, why do you want anything else? I mean, it's all right for the bloke who's got a trillion in the bank, but a little bit out of touch with the rest of that. He was asked about China and whether China, given Kimi 3, which is the latest model to come out, which trumped all of the leaderboards, she was asking him, you know, is that a threat to the US? And he said, look, I think they're doing really, really well with not a lot of compute. If they get a lot of compute, then yeah, they probably are going to be leaders, which I think is going
to... Compute, James, talk to us. What does that mean?
Computing power. The amount of computing power that's available to AI. In a car analogy, it would be the sort of the size of the engine, the horsepower of the engine, if you like. So they're probably coming out with these big models, driving a Mini. Imagine if they had the Ferrari that, say, you know, OpenAI or Perplexity or Anthropic have, they would probably be leaders, which is kind of interesting.
So what are their constraints, you know, when it comes to a lack of compute?
He says two things that are holding them back. One is chips, microchips, and one is electricity. He then went on this point around electricity and was saying that China has more electricity than the US, Europe and India combined already. And he actually thinks within a couple of years, China is going to have four times the amount of electricity production than the US, which is kind of interesting. He talked about how they're really big on robots and humanoids. Arguably, they're kind of more advanced than we are in the West. So everything was leading to, you know, he was kind of really bigging up China. That is going to get under the skin of probably his former boss and other people in the US who rightly sort of put the United States up on this pedestal when it comes to AI. Some other interesting, some other big statements.
What else has he been wanging on about?
Well, he was asked about the sort of existential risk of AI, and he sort of framed it in a positive way and said, look, it's just going to be make our lives incredible. It's going to be this incredible abundance for us all. He also said, I mean, it's so clippable, this guy, sort of built for social media, isn't he? He said, AI will exceed the sum of human intelligence within 5 years. And when Zanny sort of challenged him on it, he's just... That's just how he thinks. I mean,
It's why we won't need any money. We won't need any money in 10 years' time, because he thinks AI is going to wipe us all out.
He did acknowledge, when sort of pushed, he did sort of acknowledge some risks to society, but he, you know, in sort of typical Musk fashion, said we should focus on the opportunities created by AI rather than becoming paralyzed by fear, which is all very well when you're the one creating this stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, very funny. I also did enjoy the fact that that interview series, the Insider interview series, was sponsored by Anthropic.
So it's their sponsorship with The Economist. Fantastic.
Love that. Absolutely.
That's
love that.
Some good trolling. That's some good trolling.
Okay, James, a quick one on following up from something we talked about last week, that people are turning to AI increasingly for health advice. We talked about that in the show last Friday. This week, a rather concerning story following on from that about the risks of AI-generated doctors, especially on TikTok.
Yeah, there's some research that's been done which has found that 40% of the leading health-related TikTok content contained either AI-generated or AI-assisted material. When you get into some of the search results, it was even more extreme. 84% of videos for terms like health tips are entirely AI generated, or they've got some sort of AI assistance with them. I mean, these are people that are turning to TikTok for advice on, you know, it could be something quite small, like we've talked about. Yeah, these
James,
could be
can I just say something here? If you are turning to TikTok for your health advice, what is wrong with you?
Well, listen,
I understand that I'm on TikTok. We're all on TikTok, young people especially. There's a lot of good stuff on there. There is some funny content on there. There is some, you learn a few interesting bits and pieces. Places like BBC News and CNN, etc., they give you news on there. Great. But if you are turning to TikTok for your health advice and you think that that is going to be credible, trusted, then I'm sorry, that you are a little bit silly. And that's being polite.
Well, this is a behavior. People are doing it. And what they're finding when they search for these things are videos of what seem quite sort of realistic doctors, but they're actually AI. But the sort of the troubling thing is they are presenting themselves as medical experts. So they're not making clear that they're AI. They are coming up with stuff like false suggestions about deodorant. They are talking about the dangers of sleeping next to a phone. They're saying that microwaving food in plastic causes things like cancer. So, you know, pretty much if you go to an authoritative site, like the NHS, for example, on health advice, they're not going to tell you those things.
Okay, sorry, I've got to say one other thing, because I've addressed the people that are turning to TikTok and trusting this advice, because I question you. I do. But the bigger question is, who are the freaks that are creating this AI-generated rubbish and putting it out there? You are weird, strange, odd people. Take a look at yourselves and have a think about the impact that you're having on society and other people's lives, because you're wrong-uns. Simple as.
It does seem bizarre, but, you know, this stuff is driven by this attention economy where, you know, people are there trying to get clicks and likes and doing it in very strange ways indeed. Other bizarre things that it was that you can find on there: Coca-Cola mixed with an onion can be a pain relief treatment.
One does work. I saw that on TikTok.
Okay. And things like, you know, anti-aging products, which are just sort of rubbish and they don't actually exist. NHS England, the Royal College of GPs and the British Medical Association have all expressed concerns about the spread of AI-powered health misinformation, unsurprisingly. And this thing's got scale. The most successful AI doctor videos average around 2.5 million views each. So, you know, these aren't kind of niche, sort of strange things flitting around the edges. You know, they're getting some serious views. TikTok, we should say, they've come out and they've said that they remove any harmful health misinformation, and it works with organisations like the NHS and the World Health Organization to get that right as well.
Marvellous.
People can't see you shaking your head doing that forlorn look, but that's exactly what you're doing right now.
That's exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm about to continue shaking my head.
Oh, goodness.
Because apparently we've got to talk about AI glasses.
Whoa, get in there. Not Meta this time. Someone else is at it. Halliday have unveiled their G2 smart glasses.
Sorry, who are Halliday?
Well, who knows? New player to the market, new challenger. Gonna shake things up. Their new glasses are designed to listen to workplace meetings.
Great.
Display prompts and produce transcript summaries and action points. They deliberately have no camera, so that's sort of, that's all right. So that's, for some people, will be a bit less alarming than maybe the Meta Ray-Bans, which of course have a camera and can film things.
They're just listening on you, don't worry. They don't watch you. They just listen to you.
The camera so much. Look, there's some interesting stuff here. They can show live captions, obviously, on the lenses. They can translate up to 45 languages. This is a sort of really useful thing if you're deaf.
Oh, yeah, because you know what, James? It happens every single day that I'm out and about, and I just end up having a 20-minute conversation with somebody from Bulgaria, and I'm always like, I can't understand you. You can't understand me. And now there's at least something that can... Well, it's rubbish. When do you need this? When in life do you need a live translation of a conversation you're having? Like... This is not something that normal people need.
Well, maybe not the translation, but the captioning and that could be quite interesting, particularly if you're kind of hard of hearing and you sit in lots of meetings not really hearing what's going on or having to expend a lot of energy to do that. This could be sort of quite interesting. One feature, though, there is no external light showing you when the audio is being recorded. Halliday says that wearers should tell everyone in the room what they're doing. So they're actually... I think slightly ducking responsibility here and putting that responsibility on the people wearing them rather than something that kind of flags that people are being recorded and summarised and all those other things. $599 if you're interested. They're going to ship in September, and subscriptions, $99 a month. Sounds good. I'm going to get a pair.
Yeah, you get a pair and you creep on us all. Go for
it. What's the budget? What have we got for this sort of thing? What's in the pot for glasses?
That depends on whether we sell any more t-shirts.
Okay. I'll have a push. I'll have an ask around.
AI haven't a clue.com. We need to sell a lot of t-shirts. I tell you what's weird. Halliday Global, they don't even have a Wikipedia page. Something suspicious. Something a bit strange going on here.
You can't judge people on whether they've got... Half the stuff on Wikipedia is suspicious.
It's weird. It's a bit odd. I'm questioning who they are. Also, can we just talk about really quickly?
Yeah.
on this smart glasses topic. Did you see how laughably awful the Snap AI glasses are?
I worked at Snap for a little bit, and I was there when they brought out the first version of spectacles, which at the time, I still think now, are just a thing of beauty. They just look so, so cool. But the latest version, struggling with a little bit. It's sort of a cross between headset and glasses, isn't it? It's kind of weird.
It looks like, I don't know if you've ever been to a theme park and got on one of those 3D rides where you have to put the glasses on. It looks like that. The idea that people would actually choose to put those glasses on, and it's laughable. And this is a company that is seemingly quite reliant on this piece of tech doing well. I mean, it's hilarious. It makes the Meta ones look really cool, and that's saying something.
If they've gone down a very immersive route, haven't they? Which, I don't know. Maybe they're sort of zig where Meta zag. I don't know. Slightly baffled by that one.
Okay, we'll leave that there for now. Final story of this week. I don't know how I feel about this. I think I do know how I feel about this, and it might be different to you, actually. But this is around...
He likes it. He likes it.
Well, it's maybe not the fact I like this. Let's get into the story first, and then we'll discuss it. So AI chatbots are apparently helping people who are a little bit lonely. Some of those people might be slightly older. Via a system called Comfort Companions. Tell us all.
Yeah, this is a charity-backed project in Bristol who are using AI companions to help older people who are experiencing loneliness. It's a project that came from some founders. They came across a whole load of older people who really struggle with isolation. Like, it's a real problem in the UK. Age UK South Gloucester, which obviously Bristol sits in, estimates thousands of local residents can go for a week or more without even speaking to another person. So the founders have come up with this technology that is going to be a supplement, the most important word, rather than a replacement for human relationships.
So,
tell me.
This is interesting. This is interesting.
I think you think this is all right.
No.
Oh.
I don't. And let me tell you why. Because I don't. Because look, I do understand, especially to older people who are more isolated, the benefits that can come here. But I think it's a slippery slope. And I am so worried about the impact that this kind of socializing AI technology might have on human beings. We talked last week, I think, or the week ago, about grief tech. That's one example of where I've got huge concerns. And I think if you look over the last 10 or so years at what's happened to society, and especially to young people, because of the developments we've had and being able to communicate with people from home via our devices, via our, you know, gaming or Snapchat or whatever it might be. Mm. It's definitely had an impact, and I would say a negative impact. And this is the next level. This is, it's the fact, it's not just the fact you don't need to leave the house to chat to a human being. It's the fact you don't even need to chat to a human being anymore. And yet I do see the benefits in some isolated cases, but I'm very worried about where this will lead and where this could go and the impact it could have on us.
Well, look, and I get that. And you could probably think about a place where this thing doesn't work. But Comfort Companions have said that they are building in safeguards to stop emotional dependency. They are designing it in a way that doesn't reinforce harmful beliefs or make people more vulnerable than they are. I think this is a big problem that's hard to solve. And I think AI sort of gets you there somehow. If you're someone who can't leave the house and you can't, and you're reliant on someone coming to you and they can't, or they can only spare 10, 15 minutes a day, I think the ability to have a conversation with someone, whether it's a recipe or to talk about what makes you feel anxious, I think that's pretty positive. Just the act of doing it, I think, is okay.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. We should see if Comfort Companions want to come on, because I think what they're trying to do is in some ways admirable. And it's not them that I have an issue with. It's where this technology is going. You know, whether that is the fact that people can never really grieve and get over lost loved ones because they still think they're in their lives, because they're still having these communications and conversations with them. Whether that's the fact that people who traditionally maybe needed a bit of a push to go and socialize and meet human beings, and now that they can just turn to AI friends, they feel like they don't have to. Whether it is that you have quite concerning and potentially incorrect and worrying views on things, and rather than be challenged by human beings, you end up just having your views pushed back at you in a like AI does, in this kind of self-fulfilling circle. These are some of my worries. Maybe it's isolated old lonely people, you know, where that comes in. I do understand the role it can play. I'm just more worried about the wider, broader impact that AI companions can and could have.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think as long as all of these things are designed, you know, intentionally, you know, you go back to the sort of the grief tech, the death bots episode, and it's like, if you just created something that would help someone, was designed to help someone grieve and almost take them through a process, and then the chatbot's going to kind of go away, but it sort of helps you get there, that's being intentional about it. Just letting someone talk to someone who's passed for 3 years and you're never getting over it sort of isn't. And I sort of think the same here. I think if the right guardrails and the right protections are around these things, I think they could be really, really useful. But again, it's all about how they're built. It's all about the intent behind them. You know, is it a good thing that you're trying to solve, or are you trying to somewhere down the line get someone to subscribe to something for $19.99 a month because you want to generate money from it? It sort of all comes back to that for me.
Yeah, totally agree. The guardrails, they're my question mark, and whether and how they exist. But we've got a great guest coming up on Monday, don't we, James? You're having a chat with them, and I think we can dig a bit deeper into this topic potentially.
Yeah, you've got Dr. Agnieszka Petrovska. She's a psychoanalytic scholar. She is basically asking the question, can we teach AI to love? Like, can we give it emotion that we have as a human? Which in this case, when we're talking about loneliness, I'd say that's a pretty key tenet of being able to do this stuff. You also get into other things like, you know, does that sort of make it slightly hard to wean off? Does it make it kind of more addictive if the thing can love us and play on the things that we know and love? So she's an expert in here. Hopefully she's cracked it, which will save us trying to have to do it. Yeah, we talked to her on Monday.
We can't leave this conversation without very quickly saying, have you seen Android yet?
I have. I think anything Diane Morgan does is just utterly brilliant. She should be made a Dane immediately.
Let's not talk about it yet because it's only recently come out. People may not have caught up on it yet, but we should dive into that in a few weeks' time. We're going to be back very, very shortly with James's Big Thing and your listener question after this. James, you've been working in digital for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, but you're sort of making me sound old.
You don't need me to do that. The wrinkles in your LinkedIn bio speak for themselves.
So mean.
Hey, I only say it as I was wondering if it's rare to see a tech investment that would be recession-proof.
Well, yeah, it is. But I think AI seems to be the anomaly. Even with all this uncertainty around the economy, business leaders are actually doubling down on their AI spend.
I mean, it is hard to escape the AI chat right now. Seemingly every other article, event, and even podcast is about it. Trust us, we would know. But when you look at it from an investment perspective, does spend always equal results?
I think the hurdle isn't usually the AI itself, it's trust. Can you trust the data? Can you trust the governance? KPMG's AI Pulse research shows that while the urgency is high, many organisations are actually stuck in pilot mode.
Interesting. And what are KPMG doing to help with that?
Delighted you asked. They're working with leaders to build a foundation of trusted AI governance, focusing on business value from day one so that the technology actually pays off.
So they are the partner that helps organizations making a difference by turning AI potential into enterprise-wide reality.
Yeah, exactly. You actually do listen sometimes. That's incredible.
Occasionally.
If you want to scale with confidence rather than caution, you need to check out their latest insights. Visit
kpmg.com/UK to learn more.
What I do, what was that? I missed that address.
kpmg.com/UK to learn more.
Yeah, thank you. We're back on AI Having a Clue.
Hey there.
Are you ready to be put to the test, James?
Yeah, always ready.
Are you bringing the intellectual vibes to the podcast today?
There is mental acuity ready to be actioned.
Well, we'll be the judge of that. Okay. You tackle our listener question with KPMG. As you know, as you well know, if someone asks you a question and you answer it on the show, that somebody wins themselves this.
T-shirt.
I'm not seeing you wear yours in a while.
I should have got a bigger size. You got any XLs?
We've got XXL if you need it.
No, I'm not.
You sure? You sure?
XXL.
Hey, listen, just check.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week's listener question goes to Simon, who is an expat living in the UAE.
An international listener.
An international listener, but he's an expat. So he was... He
what box are you putting him in?
I'm just saying he did used to live here.
Fine.
So he's an international listener, but he's an expat.
Good clap.
Where do you think he is in the UAE?
I think he's in Abu Dhabi.
Why?
Just got a feeling.
I think
what's his name again?
Simon.
Yeah,
Abu Dhabi. I think he's in Dubai.
You think?
Where is there anywhere else in the UAE? Because Qatar in the UAE.
Don't think so. Oman.
Oman. What's wrong with Qatar?
I'm losing a lot of listeners.
Okay. Oman, indeed. Right. Our next question this week from Simon is: would you pay more for something that was guaranteed not to? Would you pay more for something that was guaranteed not to have been made with AI?
An AI premium.
An AI free premium?
Yes. I guess you might. You would pay. There's a sort of premium on, I'm sort of thinking about things like organic, things like fair trade, you know, signs of quality that you might pay a little bit more for. So yes, I could see that. Handmade furniture, artisan bread.
Well, I will bring you back to a few weeks ago when you laughed in my face when I brought you an analogy from Will.i.am, which was a little bit about like that with milk. You have organic milk, you have non-organic milk, you have, and his was, you have music made by AI or not by AI. You pay more for the organic milk.
Well, yeah, maybe. If something's sort of handcrafted in inverted commas or is sort of slower, has that kind of craft, you know, maybe you would pay a premium with it, you know. Something that's not AI could have that same effect. You could extend your milk analogy, maybe sort of books, you know, little sticker on it saying, yeah, this has not been sort of ghostwritten or anything by AI. Photographers, no AI enhancement. That could be interesting. Yeah, so yes, I think you actually could.
Can I just say, I would argue on that front. People already are. People pay more money for a real photographer to take something than an AI generated image. And a real book probably costs more. You know, on Etsy, you can get a bit of AI art, but it's going to cost you a lot more to buy something that a human's created.
But I guess on the photographer thing, it's almost like, and this is where a friend of the show, Janine Wright, this is where she raises it as being quite problematic.
You always find a way to bring her up, don't you?
At what point, an AI photographer, a human photographer could come to your wedding and take lots of photos, but there's nothing to say that in the post-edit that they might use some AI to touch up, make the bride look more beautiful, whatever. So, you know, where do you draw your line? I would say, though, after saying that people might be willing to pay that premium, I think the other thing with people is that humans quite like imperfections. That's the reason you would go and see like a live gig.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus just listening to it on a streaming service. So I think people want that. And we've talked about those human-made labels. I don't ever think we came to any conclusion on what the name for it should be. But there is certainly a movement around this. I would say, all of that said, though, if you sort of look back through history and, you know, human nature, people quite like convenience. People just like things when they want them in the need state that you want them. They don't necessarily buy things always based on how they're made and that origin story of them. It's because it's cheap or it's quick or it sort of fixes whatever you're thinking. And my sense is that's probably always going to win out. I think in some areas of your life or some things that you buy, you might want to be quite intentional about and you might pay more for something that's human made, as it were. But I think in general, if you just fancy some strawberries and you're pretty hungry, I don't think you're going to shop around for hours trying to find the ones that are most organic. I think you're probably just going to quench your want for strawberries and go and get it. And I just question whether people care whether it's AI or not. Again, some things certainly you will care. I just think in general, given how interwoven it is in life, I'm just not sure people are going to be that bothered and make a distinction about it.
But I think you've got a point there. I think it probably does come down to what it is. And what, you know, you look at organic food, we talked about that, and it's not the same, but it's an analogy. Sometimes, you know, people would refuse to buy non-organic chicken, but would go and have a hot dog.
Absolutely.
From a burger man. And, you know, so I think I completely agree with you on that. There's going to be some things which people are desperately human first, human only, and there's some things where people probably actually just don't care.
Very good point.
Anyway.
Oh, God, I'm violently agreeing with George Butler.
He done it! Come on! Simon, thank you for that question in... what was it, Dubai, did we decide?
Oman.
Oh, man. What's wrong with Dubai? Why do you hate it? Right. Let's move on now. Time now, James, for your big thing this week. What have you got for us?
Oh, this is a bit of you.
Go on.
Decoy font. If you think about it, we've spent years and years and years teaching AI how to understand everything we create, whether it's the words, whether it's images, whether it's video, so it can ingest it all. Basically, if a human can read it, then an AI can read it, understand it, suck it in, whatever it might be. Someone has finally fought back and has created a product, a font, no less, called Decoy Font. And it's a new font from a company called Mix Font. It allows you in the same font to write two different things. Now, this is a very audio medium, so it's quite hard to explain. But basically, humans see one message and AI see another. The trick is that every letter is sort of overlaid with a decoy character. So at first glance, you have to squint a little bit to actually sort of for the human to read the word. But when you put it into ChatGPT or into Claude or something like that, ask them in this font to read this word, it comes out with something completely differently. It could say chicken, and a human would read the word as chicken, but hidden in that word, AI sees sausages.
See what you've done there.
Sausages.
Why does this exist?
Well, it exists as an experiment, and the creator of the font said, look, it's just an experiment. But it is actually quite interesting. Like, imagine if, as a journalist, you could write your article in this decoy font so that it couldn't be scraped by AI. So it can be read by humans, so you can still monetize it in that way, but you prevent it being scraped because it would just scrape sort of gobbledygook and wouldn't be able to talk about sausages all the time, which wouldn't be particularly good. It's sort of the equivalent of, I was trying to think of an example here, of if Molly and I could speak a different language, if we could converse in Manx or Cornish and you couldn't understand it, would be sort of quite interesting. But obviously Manx or Cornish speakers could. We should have done that. We should have set up a little bit of Manx. But that's effectively what it is. It's that ability to talk in a different language that AI can't understand. Now, of course, the AI is going to catch up. It's going to figure out.
It's going to learn eventually.
Of course it is. So it is an experiment. But I do think it is kind of interesting. And maybe it goes on to... maybe it talks a little bit to that listener question we had about the sort of the premium that people might pay on things that are not AI made. And this might be a way of sort of protecting things from AI, from hoovering them up and using them. I just thought it was really neat.
That's cool. I like that.
Decoy font.
Decoy font. James.
Hi.
That's the end of the podcast this week.
No!
Oh, man!
What?
Yeah. It's time for us to say goodbye.
Oh, jeez.
I know. But... fear not, we're back on Monday.
Hurrah!
More of us! Oh, why are you booing? thanks so much for joining us this week. Thanks, of course, to Team AI Having a Clue, led brilliantly by producer Molly Carter. If you would like to share this show with a friend who might want to know more about AI, then why not send it their way?
Thank you.
Boosty algorithms. And you can check us out on all the platforms. We are, yes, we're back on Monday. But for now, James...
stick curious.
Very good.